This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Alexander Gorkovienko.
Hi, Ian. I work as a managing consultant for Spirent Communications in the UK. However, I'm a part of specialized units dealing with cybersecurity called Security Labs. Majority of my team is in the US, actually scattered across the US. Also, we have a couple of members in the UK.
We were talking before the podcast about the massive explosion of technology and the challenge we have with securing it as it appears, but more importantly, the mismatch between older systems which were never designed to be constantly updated and secured and newer technology and the threat. Can you expand a bit more on that?
Specifically, if we are talking about industrial systems or SCADA, I think it's the best example where old system, legacy systems, more or less peacefully live together with really brand new. And sometimes it's really difficult for engineers to combine all together and especially make all of those systems secure, because it means combining old interfaces, old protocols with new one. And again, some of them are in clear text. Well, many of them are in clear text then, because they were designed 20 years, 30 years ago, and no one thought about security at that time. As a result, we are dealing with quite serious security problem these days. We have to filter those things. We have to consider different options. And obviously, hackers, they also, well, they grew up. They have all beautiful arsenal of new tools, which is development every day. They are probing those systems every day. And one thing is absolutely sure. If you will not think about some preemptive activities, the consequences might be absolutely lethal. And we had plenty of examples in Ukraine, attacks on the national grid and power plants and production systems, oil and gas facilities, and many other places.
Everybody wants to be a lights-out operation. They want to be hands-off. They want to be able to do all this from remote. But to do it from remote, they need to connect systems to the internet. If these systems have no security, connecting to the internet is just like walking down the road to work and leaving your front door wide open. How do we develop an approach, an architecture, by which we can manage from remote, but without exposing these systems?
I think the wisest way would be just to ask people who are dealing with security on a daily basis. Before you start even thinking about design of any modern system, I think you have to hire some security consultant, white hat, ex-hacker, or someone who can look at security or planned security of the organization or system or power plant from the hacker's eyes. Because certain things which are absolutely obvious for hackers will be not so obvious and understandable for engineers. And I know it from my personal experience, because I worked in different organizations. I was dealing with many development teams and brilliant, absolutely brilliant engineers able to design beautiful systems. But honestly speaking, think they were not taught thinking about security. So they did as much as they could. But again, something which they did is absolutely nothing. It's not protection. It's not even trying to hide it under certain basic things. If hacker comes there, they can see hundreds of doors opened, hundreds of red bulbs flashing, and it's just like the child in the toy shop.
But the challenge of this is not just that the hacker can see it, but our own internal security team should be able to see this. Inside companies, though, those security teams don't know how those systems were constructed. They don't know what is dangerous, what isn't dangerous. Same is true for hackers. They simply see an open door and they jump through it. How do we bring the engineers and the IT security teams together so that the engineers can explain what the system does, what is a critical component in it, how it is structured, and then the security teams can begin to build some form of architecture?
The main problem here, and it's not only about SCADA or ICS, it's just across the whole IT industry, is that lack of proper awareness what the risk is, where problems are. Many organizations and IT specialists, they are not even in a position saying, I know what I don't know. And this is like a starting pivoting point from which you can say, all right, so these are gaps in my understanding of the subject. So then I can do something. If they live in a blossom thinking that everything is absolutely fine, so we bought the newest firewall, the lights are blinking, so probably we are secure, which is far from truth. So that's why you need, again, education, even such basic things like how spammers work, what kind of social engineering attacks could be on your organization, what SQL injection is, at least to see the example. Education, I think, is the key element. So from education, we can come to awareness. Once we have awareness, we can build something on it, because when people are aware, you take a hot plate, you'll burn yourself. Unless you take it once in your life, you wouldn't know, or someone should tell you about that. It's very, very important. And this is what many organizations, again, that's purely coming from my experience, they don't have. That's why I would put more emphasis. So education, starting literally from kindergarten, from school. So kids should be aware. My kids, they are. It is quite positive. My younger son came once from his school and said, "Dad, we were learning about Harkus today." And recently there was a problem with our TV and he was just very worried. They said, "Oh, but maybe some hackers took it over." I said, no. Dad is thinking about this and shouldn't worry about this, really. Yeah, but it's coming. But again, we have already many systems around us and people are maintaining those systems. And to me, they should know about security implications.
But that again brings us back to this problem of engineers in one world, security people in another world. Security people will look at a problem and find a patch. The engineers who installed those systems will be able to tell you whether or not you can patch it, because here's a big challenge with a lot of older industrial IoT. It's not designed to be patched. You can't get to the device and replace it. You can't flush it without the risk of taking other systems down around it. So unless we bring those two groups of people together, we don't solve the problem. Why are we struggling to get the two groups together?
Engineers, they prefer live in their happy world where they should not worry really about security because it's an additional burden they should carry. And security guys, they think they know everything already and they're just a bit spoiled maybe. Yes, I think obviously the best would be if some forums organized or conferences meeting where both parties could learn from each other. So security guys might learn, or security educators might learn how to bring the message to engineers, and engineers must understand that the risk is here. It's very close and it's at your door, literally. I can give you a very simple example. I was just playing with some server which we were using for testing candidates applying for a job in our company, and I just left the server running for like half an hour or something. I was just connected through another laptop to see, and I've seen exactly my connections and everything, to a bit of like CTF, like challenge we give to our candidates. And suddenly I see that there is a connection not from my IP. I don't want to say exactly from which country, but it was definitely, well, far from here. It was online for half an hour. The truth is, all our publicly available systems, they're routinely scanned all 24/7. And I think all sysadmins in the world, they probably will echo what I say. And they know it's a reality. So if you have your system not patched or accidentally put online, well, whom to blame, really? You have to be aware, you have to know about those things, and it's good to see tangible examples how it works, what hackers could do, and what the implications of that. Because to see it once, it's better than just reading 1,000 words.
The other challenge with many of these systems, particularly in critical national infrastructure or engineering-driven systems, is that from a security team's perspective, they don't know what the dependencies are. For example, an engineer comes in from a third-party company who's going to maintain a particular piece of equipment. Security teams often don't know he's there. They don't know what he's doing with the system. They don't know what level of access he requires to that system. The engineering team will want him to have maximum access to that system so he can do everything he needs. So we immediately have a conflict between internal controls. Where do we get a better understanding of the ecosystem of all those objects inside our business?
From the engineer's point of view, it's impossible to manually check every single device, which is thousands of devices in your manufactory or refinery or wherever else. It's absolutely impossible. So we have to rely on our vendors. So we have to trust them. So trust, surprisingly, it's a quite important element in this game. We have to see some sort of certificates probably, or some information proving that it was tested properly. And again, trust is a key element. So we're choosing this vendor, not the other vendor. Once it's done, very important element is to test the things. Again, ask the professional pen testing company, for example, security company, to come and try to play a game and simulate real world attacks. And there are a variety of options now, from manual assessment through automated and super fancy solutions, like even our company is working on, called DBA, and the data breach assessment. So it's like hundreds of pen testers working 24/7 in non-obtrusive way, testing banks and manufacturers and probing ports and working with agents installed inside. So different options, but this is a necessity, I would say. So do not rely on the fact that someone told you that it's secure, or it should be secure because I'm connected this thing to this port and I set up those rules on my firewall IDS. It's just purely wishful thinking, in my opinion, because you don't know. There is still human element here, and this is quite important element in this game. Best is to do what you should and ask professionals to come and try to probe how secure your system really is.
Bringing those red teams in can be a real challenge for organizations. How do we create a proper working relationship for those organizations that have never worked with pen testers and red teams, so that they can actually structurally test what's open and what's at risk without causing an automated reaction.
Definitely agree with you. I think the general approach is quite reactive, I would say. At least it was for a long time reactive. So we have to wait for disaster to happen and then we scratch our head and think, maybe we should actually do something with it. But again, I think education is a very important element here. So I will probably come back to this point. Because unless you are convinced that it's worth to spend money, maybe some money now, but not 100 times more in case of disaster, or maybe in case of disaster, you will not be even able to deal with this because you don't know. There are quite sophisticated attacks these days. And attacks is one thing, but PR and the fact that you are on the first page of all newspapers, not maybe in the country, but across the globe, it may not be helpful for your public image. Better think in advance, better prepare for unpredictable. I'm perfectly aware that if you do FAT tests in power plant, my FAT test might take 3 years. So if you want to test something or upgrade firmware, it's not like you can upgrade your operating system, reboot, and everything works as brand new. It doesn't work like this. If you think in advance, you will probably prepare some staging environment. You will have a lab where you can build a necessary knowledge about the subject. You can grow your own personnel specialized in this. You'll acquire necessary knowledge and competence to be able to deal with this in the future. But again, it comes first of all from the awareness, understanding, and do it step by step. I don't think it's ever late really to start. It's better to do it now if you really see the value in this.
It brings us back to that first question about the speed of technological growth. If we look around today, users expect their enterprise apps to update as fast as the apps on their telephone. If there's a problem, they expect a new version tomorrow morning on their telephone. Who cares if the app on my phone crashes? I know there's going to be an update tomorrow morning. Enterprises are beginning to move that way themselves. The problem is once we get out to the Internet of Things, once we get out to industrial control systems, as you say, there are long chains that have to be signed off before something can be deployed, particularly in a power station or in the case of aircraft. How do we speed up those validation processes at that level so that we can ensure that the speed of technology change on one side matches those older systems? It brings them more into line. Otherwise, that gap's going to get bigger. And any time we've got a gap, that's where our attack surface gets exploited.
What can be done is some regulations, maybe some labeling like this recent initiative in the UK, which is quite noble, quite good, I think. I wouldn't say it would save us completely by itself, but it's a good starting point. So we can mandate companies to provide clear information about updates, about point of contact and how long the device will be maintained. Security must not be bolted onto the design. It should be an integral part of that from the very beginning. I can give you a funny example also from my past. I was once invited to the meeting of a development team and they were working on smart perfume bottle. What could it be? And it was like something, let's imagine the picture, the young lady opening her eyes in the morning, taking a bottle of perfume, using it, and the embedded camera automatically making a picture of her smiling and putting to social media. Something. Anyone here thought about security implication of this? How many pictures of celebrities you've seen already? How many more do you want? That's a gap between developers, designers, and security guys. I understand their best intention. From commercial point of view, it's wonderful design. However, the security implication is absolutely massive. You should not be really a security specialist to think about it. So again, to me, I was really surprised that I was seeing it as a demo. These things are happening. People are more thinking about how to be first on the market, how to bring their product as soon as possible, and well, patch it later. But in case of IoT, in case of complex systems also, it's not as easy as you might think. Yes, we're talking about mobile application. Maybe you just reload it or it's automatically updated every day. But in case of your smart thermostat, can you guarantee it will be updated automatically or how often? What about the router in power plant or oil refinery?
I'd take that issue with government and regulation a bit further. Yes, the UK government said companies have got to make these statements. But companies get bought. Companies go out of business. Company assets get acquired by somebody else. At the moment, there's no expectation in that document put out by the UK company that says anybody buying that other business has to take on all those obligations in terms of the equipment. They can simply buy that company for some intellectual property and say, well, that's it. We're no longer manufacturing, supporting, or looking after those devices. The French government last year suggested to the European Commission that there should be in law a similar set of rules to what the UK has now said. How do we create a set of legislation that, first of all, can withstand the changes of companies, i.e. a company being taken over and support that way? But also, how do we create those rules in such a way that they are flexible and updated? Because legislation takes a very long time for approval, testing, and then to be passed as law.
I'm not sure if this is a good analogy, but let's say I'm buying a car from you, I must be sure it works properly and everything. So I have certain obligations to do with the assets I'm taking from you. Even this is now it's mine. Technically, I can do whatever I like. I can crash it if I want. But still, there are certain legal things which I must do. So maybe this sort of regulations also should be in place. So even if I'm acquiring a business, I'm still responsible for this product line. It's my decision whether to manufacture it or not in the future. But if I'm deciding to do so, all rules previously applied to the predecessor should be applicable to me.
But that's quite a complicated problem because that now stops a lot of business takeovers. It means a lot of companies who set out today as a startup who say, yep, I'm going to grow to a certain point and I know who I want to buy me, may find themselves now in a market where nobody wants to buy them because they don't want to take on the obligations that your company originally had. That seems kind of counterintuitive to an open market position.
I'm not entirely agree with you because if you are making, let's say, weapon, there are certain regulations, what you can do with it and whom you can sell it. So the same with, even if you are a startup making this and that, you know the implications of what you are developing. Those rules will be applicable to you automatically, whether you like it or not.
But how do you then enforce them? We've seen in the courts over the last few months, two court cases lost where users have tried to force companies to continue to support a product. The companies simply say when we release the product, it has a 2-year or a 3-year life cycle. We know in an industrial environment that 2 to 3 years becomes 10, 15, 20, 30 years. There are probably an awful lot of industrial IoT devices out there for which the companies went out of business 10, 15, 20 years ago. So how do we, and again I'm thinking more about critical national infrastructure and manufacturing and chemical plants here than I am consumer devices, but how do we adapt that same approach to be able to sustain industry?
In case we have no one responsible for a perfectly working solution at, let's say, the power plant, maybe we should think about in advance to think about either a consultancy or an organization or another vendor whom it might be just a project just to maintain some legacy system so they can earn some money if no one else can be responsible. But I think it's very important that the legislation should regulate this responsibility. So there should be no situation in place where something can be screwed or the system stopped working and there is no one to blame or no one who will say, oh, well, that's not me. Oh, this is not me. Because, well, the vendor is not on the market anymore. So this should never happen. It should be also in the interest of the organization or manufacturer or power plant or whatever to have someone who is able to maintain whatever they've got till the end of life cycle, even if the vendor is not on the market anymore.
In the late 80s, early 90s, I worked for a number of companies whose customers required the software code was put into escrow. And that was purely in case the software company went bust, they could still get access to that source code.
Yes, it's quite common practice, actually.
But it's not common practice in the industrial equipment field. Do you think from a security perspective, and again we're talking about this long tail of equipment, that perhaps one of the changes that would be more beneficial in law would be to simply say that companies must have a process where that intellectual property can be put into escrow, so should they go out of business and that equipment still be in use, those customers could gain some access to that intellectual property in order to be able to maintain those devices?
Oh, absolutely. Obviously, it's less of a problem for a firmware for my old MP3 player, but definitely for industrial IoT systems, that for sure would be a good option. Because again, I want to repeat that should be someone who will be able to maintain it sooner or later, even if the original vendor is not with us anymore. So still there should be this code, the software or firmware, which could be taken and analyzed and updated relatively regular basis, or at least until you can change it to something more advanced and newer.
If I'm running a chemical plant, I come to you and say, what do I need to do to fix my security? What are you going to give me as my top three things?
Probably the first thing you need to do to have an audit. So someone should do a bit of paperwork exercise without touching any devices. There is a bit of familiarity with what do you have, what systems, how they're configured. Even when you do a paper analysis, you can find many interesting things like configuration of your network, network segregation or segmentation. So those things you can pick up quite easily and quite quickly. The next step would be to check procedure standard routines like password changes, password updates or strength or how how often you update firmware, how often patches are, let's say, on workstations, etc., etc. So processes and policies, are they in place? And the third thing I would definitely recommend to do proper security penetration testing. But again, this should be done only by companies having in-depth knowledge and specialization in this, because testing a power plant, it's far from testing the web server, believe me. And the consequences of nmap scan could be quite disastrous. You can't reboot the power plant, trust me. You should be really, really careful and think 10 or 20 times before you press the wrong button.
Alexander, thank you for talking to us.
Pleasure. Thank you.